This is the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. Since early March, the baseball season has started, the U.S. House has failed and then succeeded in passing an Obamacare repeal and replace effort, and Airbnb has started collecting hotel taxes from guests in Miami-Dade and Broward counties. So a lot can happen in just 2 months' time here in South Florida. It's not quite enough time, though, in Tallahassee for lawmakers in Florida to agree on the one thing that they have to do during their annual 60-day regular legislative session. The regular session ends today, and officially there is no budget. There is a deal, though, and the budget should be voted on in a special session early next week and then sent to Governor Rick Scott. Now, there's no guarantee, though, the governor will sign it since it does not include any of his three big spending priorities. The budget is not the only piece of unfinished business in the final hours of the regular session. Medical marijuana, school testing, recess, all of it remains officially undecided right now, just hours before the gavel falls, ending the session later on today. Have you been paying attention to the decisions that lawmakers are debating on your behalf? What is the issue that you care about? Is it school funding? Is it property tax changes? Money for the environment, for the arts? Call us now, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. You can also tweet us your thoughts at WLRN on Twitter. We got a couple of listener texts earlier. Robert from Boynton Beach saying that he is paying attention to the session. Education issues, including funding, Okeechobee water issues, and environmental concerns top his list. Lisa from Palmetto Bay sent us this text. The lake challenges and the gambling challenges are her priorities. She wrote, I want to restore the Everglades to its best, and I want all dog racing abolished. You can add your voice at 800-743-WLRN. The Florida House Speaker Richard Corcoran repeated his promise at the beginning of the legislative session about 60 days ago.
What I said is that we are going to have the most open, the most accountable, the most transparent legislative session in the history of not only Florida, but of America.
Not only Florida, but of America. Has that been accomplished as the regular session winds down today? Nancy Ankrum is the editorial page editor of our partner, the Miami Herald. Rosemary O'Hara is the editorial page editor of the South Florida Sun-Sentinel. Welcome both of you back to the Florida Roundup. Wonderful to have you. Rosemary, has this been an open, accountable, and most transparent legislative session in America?
Well, it started out that way when Speaker Corcoran wrote new rules for the chamber that said that every item that goes into the budget needed its own separate bill. It certainly held promise that it was a new day, but as at the end of the session, it's a whole different culture there. The decisions, it's so hard to know what's in the budget because so much, not just of the budget, but of the policy that guides education and insurance and gambling. So much of this has been done behind closed doors. So he promised that it was going to be the most transparent in the country. In the end, it was just a repeat of the smoke-filled rooms of years gone by.
Without the smoke, though, because of the smoking rules. Nancy, how about it? What's your grade on transparency?
I think that
here?
This was a sandbag session, and I give them an F. I think there were so many things that were rolled out quickly and that they hoped to push through, some of which, thank goodness, failed, in particular, casinos.
The gambling negotiation between the House and Senate did fall apart.
Absolutely, it fell apart. At the same time that they did go behind closed doors for that, there were also several attempts for on the part of this legislature to keep Floridians in the dark in perpetuity.
Yeah, the sunshine laws.
Several attacks on the sunshine laws, which have been a very progressive and significant law for the state of Florida.
It has been a shining beacon of government transparency seen across the country. And we asked some of our Facebook fans and friends what was the most important issue for them. In fact, transparency came up as a significant issue for folks on social media when it came to this government.
Well, you know, the Florida legislature is the only government body in Florida that's exempted from the Sunshine Law, so they get to talk to each other in secret. And so they wanted to spread the wealth, you know, and let people at local governments also meet two at a time to talk to one another about how do they feel. Supposedly, they couldn't line up votes in these secret conversations, but when you said, Well, how would we know? The sponsor of the bill says, well, you can ask them. So if it's illegal to line up votes, they're supposed to just admit that, yeah, we lined up votes, you know?
They're sneaky, but not dumb.
Yeah. 800-743-9576,
the Florida regular legislative session winding down. What is the issue that has grabbed your attention? Is it transparency? Is it gambling expansion? One of the gambling efforts would have allowed a new casino in Miami-Dade County. It also would have allowed dog racing to stop, but gambling to continue at those races and horse racing to stop at those paramutuals, but gambling to continue. Nancy Ankrum is the editorial page editor and our partner of the Miami Herald. Rosemary O'Hara has the same title at the South Florida Sun Sentinel. We're pleased to have them back both here on the Florida Roundup. This final budget that the House is landing today and likely to vote on in a special session early next week, just over $83 billion, Nancy. It essentially has a small percentage increase compared to the spending plan for this year. So state government spending will expand despite Republican House efforts to really restrict it this year. What has made the difference? What has stuck out to you about this spending plan?
What has stuck out are the cuts. The cuts to Medicaid.
Yeah.
Significant cuts to Medicaid. And the public hospitals are now in limbo. There is this little dance around the low-income pool with monies that supplement the charitable care that they give, and also public school funding. I think that they are really feeling their Wheaties, taking the lead from the very top in this country now, given the change in administration, and they're all in for charter schools.
Let's split this apart here. Healthcare and education together is about two-thirds of the state budget, so no doubt that there'd be a big focus on that. The cuts in hospital funding held up these budget talks so that it required this special sessions. The second time in 3 years, it delayed the deal. Rick Christie is the editorial page editor of the Palm Beach Post. He joins us now from Boynton Beach. Rick, from your perspective on this healthcare funding tie-up regarding Medicaid cuts and cuts to safety net hospitals, how is that going to affect your community potentially?
Well, I think that that the money that the hospitals like St. Mary's Medical Center and Delray Medical Center, which are two big trauma hospitals, will probably feel it more than anybody else. I think those hospitals are always looking for a certain level of funding so that they can function and take care of so many indigent patients, which that's one of their primary responsibilities. So it's not welcome news, obviously, for them. I think our other hospitals also will probably be seeing a cut, some kind of cut as well. But I think those two trauma hospitals will be feeling it the most, unfortunately.
Rosemary, education spending also a big chunk of the debate. Nancy mentioned this. The per pupil spending is going up by less than $25 per head in the state of Florida, but there's still a big increase because the population continues to expand. Have you been able to discern the priorities of lawmakers when it comes to how they're allocating these education dollars?
Well, even on the per pupil spending going up, that's the line that they're saying. But we got an op-ed that's running in our Sunday paper from our superintendent saying that there's something in that line that you don't know, in that thing that happened behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. What they're telling you on the surface isn't really what it is. They're suggesting that there's a cut in per pupil spending. So again, more will be fleshed out as actual details come out, but the superintendents are arguing that. Another issue is the charter school spending. So $200 million for the Schools of Hope, for new charter schools to come into areas that, you know, have failing schools. No one wants failing schools, but we don't know that these companies are able to do anything any better. And on the issue of high-stakes testing, they passed this sweeping education bill that says, oh, you got to have recess. We're all for recess, you know? But on the issue of high-stakes testing, the only thing that they are cutting is like the end of school
algebra two. One test is being cut out of this. That was the compromise bill here, though.
And civics. Apparently civics is also in 2000. Like nobody knows who the Speaker of the House is, and so we're going to cut civics?
Of course. Look, I do think we do see this trend of, you know, if we keep people in the dark and start when they're in first grade, you know, we can play this game forever.
Yeah.
This is a concerted effort to have darkness when it comes to government operations and civics, even at the elementary school level.
And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but my goodness.
All right. Well, I will raise my hand for recess. I will also raise my hand that the Florida Roundup can certainly act as your weekly civics lesson, if necessary, throughout the South Florida area.
And our newspapers.
Absolutely. And the op-ed pages especially. Nancy Ankrum covers the op-ed page for the Herald. Rosemary O'Hara does the same for the South Florida Sun-Sentinel. And Rick Christie is along with us, the editorial page editor of the Palm Beach Post. Join us at 800-743-9576 as the Florida legislative session, the regular session, winds down. Let's begin in Miami, where Randall joins the conversation. Thanks for calling, Randall. You're on the radio.
Yes, I wanted to know, why wasn't some of the money cut for the money that they spend to go to space with and build all these space stations? They talk about the trillions of dollars that's being spent on space. Is anybody really going to go and live in space?
Well, God,
anybody want to?
Randall, I think you're a little confused there. That would be federal spending on NASA as opposed to state spending. But I'm going to take your comment here and twist it into an area of economic development, because space and the Space Coast has been an area that the governor has focused on, Governor Rick Scott has focused on, and certainly those legislators in that area of the Space Coast have focused on to really try to fill in the gaps of the cuts in federal space spending over the past several years. So let me put it to you, Rick Christie. You're closest to the Space Coast up there in Palm Beach County. The governor's not getting the dollars that he wants for economic development. Some of those presumably could have been targeted at engineering firms and technology firms to fill in those job gaps left by the space industry, the government space spending in the Space Coast in Florida.
Well, yeah, I think the problem is not specifically just the Space Coast when it comes to that kind of spending. I think the problem has been Enterprise Florida itself, as well as some of these, as well as the other economic development incentive programs that the governor loves. The accountability of those programs has been questioned a great deal, and that's where the problems lie with it overall. I think in terms of the Space Coast, if I remember correctly, that on the federal level, there was money added to the budget for NASA. So they did get a little bit of something on the federal level. But in terms of economic development, when you look at Visit Florida, Enterprise Florida, and so on, those pet projects of the governor are facing, as I think you probably have already talked about, facing some problems in terms of funding.
By problems, you mean no funding or very little funding?
Well, yeah, no, or very little. And, you know, I think it's kind of curious that the governor kind of just let fall to the wayside is the film industry in Florida, which has really just gotten less and less money, and I don't know what's in the budget for it this year.
I don't believe anything is in the budget. This was a program that had a finite amount of tax credits that film producers and television producers could apply for. That limit was hit months and months ago, and there's no expansion of that as far as we can tell.
And it has always been considered corporate welfare.
Right.
And for the jobs governor to let that go is just the most inscrutable move. And we are losing jobs. We are losing this industry to Georgia, to the West Coast, to much more welcoming states. And as it was put to me, the film industry has dried up in Florida.
You know, and House Republicans have been successful in squeezing the funding for Enterprise Florida, the Economic Development Group, for Visit Florida, the state tourism marketing agency. And they have been successful in not reapproving any new dollars for this film incentive program as well. And the House Republicans and their supporters say, well, the state government shouldn't be in the business of picking winners. But circling back around to what's happening in education and charter schools, Rosemary, with the Schools of Hope plan, that's essentially exactly what they're doing. Maybe they're not picking specific companies as winners, but they're looking at charter schools to funnel $200 million toward that industry.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, the government picks winners and losers all the time with contracts. And, you know, like 2/3 of the state budget is sent out in contracts. The other area where they're picking winners and losers right now is in the medical marijuana area.
Yep. I'm going to hold off there because we're going to get to that in the next segment. But the other place also is in gambling.
Right.
Gambling has the negotiations had fallen apart. The Seminole Compact, which has expired, represents hundreds of millions of dollars every year in state revenue.
Right.
And that remains in an escrow right now where the state can't touch it because they haven't been able to negotiate, Rick, the ability to expand gaming like the Seminoles would like, and also face off with, what, 8 counties in North Florida that have talked about accepting casinos. And some supporters think it should be a statewide vote because it's not just those specific counties that could have the impact of the casinos. And those is Palm Beach County.
Yeah, with our Palm Beach Kennel Club, I think that's an example of there are just so many different interests when it comes to casino gambling, and so many different interests who want a piece of the pie. Even though you may have some conservatives who say, "Oh, I hate gambling; it's a terrible thing," and so on and so forth. Regardless, when it comes down to it, everybody wants their piece. And whether it be dealing with the Kennel Club, as we do in Palm Beach County, which has come under fire, obviously in recent years, mm-hmm. for dog races, period. But they want something to replace that. Certainly, if they do lose, when they do lose, I tend to think when they do lose dog racing. But I think in terms of gambling, which is much bigger, obviously in Broward County, but and down in Miami-Dade, but still, I think the problem with it is just that you just have too many interests who want a piece.
I'm not surprised that a gambling deal failed. The House and Senate were so far apart on where they started. The House made clear all along that it didn't want an expansion of gambling. Part of that is driven by Orlando and Disney, mm-hmm. and trying to keep the family-friendly nature of the state. It's also a competitive, Orlando has all these big conventions in South Florida, if there were these destinations down here. Even in the casinos for Miami or Broward, the Seminoles played a role in that, heard. Last year, there was going to be a destination casino in Broward and in Miami-Dade. This year it was just Miami-Dade,
in
part because of the Seminoles.
Right.
You know, the answer on this is that there's not going to be comprehensive gambling legislation coming. And so if they could just start one place, if they could just get rid of the requirement that you have to run dogs in order to have a game room at these dog tracks or run horses.
Ridiculous connections.
Yeah. Start there. Do something
at least.
This
is the so-called split, the decoupling idea.
The decoupling idea. They can't get anything done.
Right. 800-743-9576, joining us on the Florida Roundup, talking about the state legislative session. What issue is important to you? We've got the trio of editorial page editors representing all of South Florida, from the Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. I'm Tom Hudson. We want to go to West Palm Beach, where Bob is joining us on the Roundup. Bob, you're on the radio. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time. Yeah, I wanted to make a few comments that, you know, when you start stealing businesses from other states or companies to create jobs, all you're doing is pirating, and you're really not creating jobs. But the one thing that's really, at least in Palm Beach County, is hurting the county is the property tax in certain areas, City Place or Delray or Boca. If you're unfortunate enough to live next to one of these redevelopment agencies areas in the heart of downtown, you can see your taxes go up 200-300% on commercial property. I'm talking about little old block buildings that have been there for 50 years.
Right. Residential property taxes have a ceiling to those annual limits, whereas commercial properties don't.
Right. But once the commercial property is sold for multifamily, say down in Delaware where they're building four stories or whatever, when you get in that little circle there where the money's big, you're co-opted. And for the individual businessman that's been here since the 20s or 30s or 40s, it gets to be almost the straw that breaks the camel's back, because if you get a 200-300% increase on your taxes, you still have to generate that much product
sure.
to be able to pay for it. And, you know, $7,000 to $10,000 is a lot of money for a little 50-foot lot.
Absolutely. Bob, I get it. I'm going to phrase the question like this and put it to Rick Christie. It's the cost of continuing to grow the Florida economy. And does this Florida budget, this Florida state budget, do anything to answer the concerns of Bob in West Palm Beach about the cost of continuing to do business, the tax, the regulatory cost of trying to grow these local businesses?
Well, I think so. I think over the last several years, that's something that the legislature and Governor Rick Scott have been working on in terms of reducing taxes to businesses in the state of Florida. The legislature hasn't given the governor everything that he's wanted, but things like either reducing or getting rid of the taxes on commercial leases and so on have made,
they've tried that. That failed this year, but that was one of those governor plans at the beginning of session that, frankly, he kind of gave up relatively quickly, and the Republicans did as well. Nancy, your thoughts?
You know, I think this is a good chance to slide over into the homestead exemption constitutional amendment that lawmakers want to give homeowners a tax break.
And I'm going to have you act as the tease for the next segment, because that's one of those exact issues we're going to be talking about in our next segment, as well as other constitutional amendments, medical marijuana, the solar amendment. Are lawmakers listening to voters on these amendments? That's next as the roundup continues.